श्रीमद् विष्णु पुराण कृष्ण प्रसाद भूतले श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नमः नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी चरणी. Best I can give you is Srimad Bhagavatam class 2.23.72. Well, or you want, it's easier if I give you the word, few words to search. We should not be disturbed, comma, even. If that helps. So, I've been hearing some stories recently about devotees who went through reverses. And they went through it in a way that they accepted it as Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's mercy, completely undisturbed. No doubt that this was anything bad. And so I thought tonight we could talk about this because this is extremely important for us. And it's exemplified in the Bhagavatam in story after story. And it's a symptom of a surrendered soul, someone who is surrendered knows that Krishna is always protecting him, even when it may seem like he's not. So there are a few assumptions that we need to make in order to be able to accept and apply this principle that whatever is happening, it's Krishna's mercy. It's not something bad. Krishna doesn't like us, or he wants to harm us. It's never like that. At least not if you're sincerely trying to be Krishna conscious. So, in the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains that, as we know, the material world is created ultimately for our liberation. And the Prabhupada said, everything in this world is created to help us get out of this world. That's why it's there. Even all the things that tempt us, all the things that are bad, ultimately, everything has its purpose in detaching us from this world and inspiring us to be Krishna conscious and go back to Godhead. So that's principle one. With that principle, we make the assumption that whatever is happening to us has, knowingly or unknowingly, has value for us in coming closer to Krishna. It may not be apparent all the time. So that assumption we make. The second assumption we make, and these assumptions are based on the reality of Krishna's promises and Prabhupada's statements, the second assumption is that everything Krishna does for his devotee is to help that devotee come closer to him. Krishna would never do anything to push you away. Now you might do something to cause yourself to go away from Krishna. That's something different. And then sometimes we foolishly think Krishna did it when we did it. And then we might blame Krishna or say, Krishna, I don't understand why you did that. And if you had a conversation with Krishna, he would say, I didn't do that, you did it. So Krishna will never say, okay, Eddie, I don't like you, so we'll just like, you know, throw you off a cliff. Well, he might throw you off a cliff if that would help you become Krishna conscious. He wouldn't just arbitrarily throw you off a cliff. Now, you might be a little negligent and fall off the cliff, but that's your fault, not Krishna doing it. So our second assumption is that Krishna, for his devotees, will only do things which are beneficial, even if they don't appear beneficial, even if they appear hurtful. All right. Were you able to get a quote up? It's just a Srimad Bhagavatam class 2.23.72, and this part says we should not be disturbed. It's just one paragraph. We were going to put it up for the sake of impact that you could read it, but it's whether we can find it easily or not is another thing. We should not be disturbed, comma, even superficially. But let me read it, and when it comes up on the board, we can read it again. So this is February 23rd, 1972, for those of you in your early 20s, this is like the prehistoric age, right? People actually existed then without mobile phones, somehow or other. I don't know how they did it, but they did. We should not be disturbed. Even superficially, we see that a devotee is in distress. Devotee, real devotee, he does not take anything as distress. He takes everything as Krishna's mercy. Otherwise, meaning he doesn't take it as Krishna's mercy. Or he questions, why Krishna, why did you do that? Otherwise, that is not pure devotion. Actually, a devotee is never in distress. People may see that he is in distress. So he's not in distress even though he's in distress. People may see he's in distress. It's a distressful situation, but he's not in distress. Why? Because he takes everything as Krishna's mercy. Krishna wants this. Krishna's doing this. Why is he doing it? Because it's for my benefit. That's how a devotee takes it. So now, let's go to Bhagavatam. I guess, did we get it? No, it was the date. No, it was just the Bhagavatam class on February 23rd, 1972. Then you have to find the paragraph. We should not be disturbed. Anyway, let's see if you get it. We'll read it again, and then we can give an example of this from the Bhagavatam. And it's a very interesting example. Most of us know this story of Maharshchitra Ketu. And Maharshchitra Ketu was a king, but also a devotee. Very advanced, very pure. Maybe you can say not completely pure, but he became very pure by the association of Narada Muni. And he went to visit Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was sitting in the assembly of sadhus. And his wife, Parvati, was sitting on his lap. So, if my wife were sitting on my lap right now, would you think that's weird? While I'm giving talk? Might somebody you say something or be talking amongst yourself? Maybe I should have done that as a teaching tool. Anyway, so Maharshchitra Ketu was, he had a very good relationship with Chitra Ketu. So he, with Lord Shiva, but he thought that this is not really good for Lord Shiva's reputation. He didn't doubt Lord Shiva anyway. He just thought, this is not good for your reputation. So he said something, kind of in a joking way. You know, something like, what's up with your wife on your lap? What's that all about? Something. It was in fun and light. But Shiva's wife, Parvati, didn't take it that way. She was very upset. How dare you criticize Lord Shiva? How dare you criticize my husband? So she became very angry. And it's interesting that in a lot of stories in the Bhagavatam, we find that people, when they got angry, they didn't kill, they cursed. And they had the power to curse, and they could make things happen by their curse. And so Mother Parvati had the power to cause Maharshchitra Ketu to take birth as a non-devotee, asura, ungodly. Sometimes we use the word demon, but it just means ungodly, asura, someone who's not godly. She had the power to cause that to happen in his next life. So that's how she expressed her anger. And basically, Maharishi Chitra Ketu said, whatever, you know, he didn't use those words, but that was kind of the mood. Put yourself in his place. You go over to your friend's house, and you think he's acting improperly with his wife, and there are people around, and you say, Prabhu, you know, it's not so kosher. And his wife gets a hold of it, and she curses you to become a demon in your next life. How would you feel? You'd be calling up the GBC to get her removed, right? Thrown out of this town, calling all your friends, you won't believe what happened, etc. So, because a devotee accepts everything as Krishna's will and divine arrangement and accepts that everything is for his benefit, whether you don't have to understand how it's for your benefit at that moment, but that's the principle. You understand Krishna loves me, everything is ultimately going to be helping me. He just said, okay, fine. He didn't retaliate. So this is interesting. Because in every story you see in the Bhagavatam, when a devotee accepts a situation, a distressful situation, difficult situation, a situation where they've been offended or treated unjustly, whenever they accept it, they make no offense to the person who caused it. There's never offense, there's never resentment, there's never anger. It's interesting. Because they accept it as divine arrangement. Which therefore would mean, let's turn that around, that if we are upset and angry and resentful and so forth with the person or situation that causes the distress, that means we must not be accepting it as Krishna's arrangement. But we're rather accepting it as so-and-so. It's Krishna Balaram's fault. It's not Krishna's arrangement, it's Krishna Balaram's fault. Does that make sense? There's, you know, if I don't accept it as Krishna's arrangement, then I find somebody to blame. Because there has to be a cause, right? Of, it's not me, it's not my karma, I didn't do anything, I'm innocent, I'm a good guy. So it must be your fault. Whereas if I accept it, maybe I'm a good guy, but Krishna's pushing me in a certain way because he knows this is going to help me, so then I don't blame you. So Maharishi Chitra Ketu just took it. And Lord Shiva was so impressed because that behavior is quite unusual, isn't it? I mean, like, how many people are offended, hurt, cursed to become demons in their next life? And they just say, yeah, okay, whatever, no problem. How many people do that? Only one can do that who accepts it as Krishna's mercy. So then, Lord Shiva said to his wife, he said, look at this. You see what just happened? He accepted it, he didn't try to retaliate. That's a pure devotee. That's one of the symptoms of a pure devotee. So now let's read this again. And kind of underlines, maybe it'll have a different little influence or effect on it. We should not be disturbed, even superficially, when we see that a devotee is in distress. Devotee will devotee, he does not take anything as distress. He takes everything as Krishna's mercy. You ever, you know, all these good things happen, you go, oh, Krishna's mercy. And then something bad happens, and then what do you say? Everything is Krishna's mercy. You can't just say the good is Krishna's mercy. You have to say everything. My joke, if you come to my house to eat and you like the prasadam, I say, I made it. If you don't like it, I say, my wife made it. So something good happens, you say, yeah, I did it. And something bad happens, it's God's fault. Something like that. No, it's always his mercy. It's always happening by his will and his arrangement. The devotee takes everything as Krishna's mercy. Tateinu kampam sushimikshamano. Otherwise, that is not pure devotion. So this is nice. This statement is nice because we're all trying to become pure devotees, right? I hope. Yeah. Anybody here against becoming a pure devotee? Anybody have on your to-do list not to become a pure devotee? So we're all trying to become pure devotees. So now, Prabhupada's showing or defining what pure devotion is. That's helpful, right? I want to become pure devotee. I need to know, right? Makes sense? So, if I blame someone or some situation, if I'm in distress and I don't accept that this is Krishna's arrangement, and see, and somehow they try to find the good in it, try to find the lesson, try to find the inspiration, the motivation, try to see how Krishna is detaching me in some way, giving me experience that will make me stronger to see something. That's not pure devotion. Interesting, isn't it? That's it. So. But now from a morning walk. I'm reading from an article that I've written, and it's called "It's All Krishna's Mercy for Krishna." If you like the whole article, if you just Google it, it should come up. Or you go to mahatmadas.com and go to newsletters, it should come up. It's all Krishna's mercy, brother. Right? Isn't it? So this is from a morning walk, May 2nd, 1974. If we understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, absolute truth, then this understanding that either suffering or enjoying is all Krishna's mercy. There must be some purpose. When Krishna puts me into suffering, there must be some purpose. So we should welcome because it is Krishna's mercy. It is Krishna's mercy that he is reforming. So this is how a pure devotee thinks. Krishna would never put me into distress if it wasn't good for me. You agree? You accept it? If we don't accept that, then we're doubting that Krishna has affection for us. We're doubting that Krishna cares for us. Have you ever been in a situation which was extremely difficult, which you would never wish on anybody? But when you look back on it, you think that was one of the most strengthening or revealing or enlightening or important experiences in my life. Any of you have that? Well, let me ask the question. Any of you not have that? Okay, so we've all been through many experiences that have strengthened us. And when I look back at those experiences, I think that helped me so much, but I'd never want to go through it again. But it made me better or stronger. And Krishna knew I was weak in a certain way, and Krishna knew that if he put me in this particular situation, I would become stronger. And I yelled and screamed and kicked all the way through. But when I look back, as we all will say, I wouldn't trade that experience in for anything. Even though I may not want to go through it again, I wouldn't trade it in for anything. So Krishna knows I needed that. I just heard a story the other day. A man was going to meet a girl that he didn't know for reasons that we will not mention in the temple. And his GPS broke, and GPS couldn't find the place. And he was going around in circles trying to find it, and the GPS would not direct him. Isn't that interesting? Krishna was foiling his plans by his mystic power, disturbing the GPS. Have any of you ever had an experience like that? Where like something is like going wrong and you can't do something and you can't figure out why, there's no reason. Your watch is turning backwards, your car's driving backwards, you know, your clock is going back. Like everything is backwards, then later you realize Krishna has protected. So that's his mercy. And sometimes we scream and kick and we don't like it. But when you become a surrendered devotee and you become serious, Krishna says, okay, we got a serious one here. Okay, let's put the metal in the fire and strengthen it, and wedge it, and form it the way we want. One time, Jagtaka Maharaj was giving an initiation. right at like 1 minute before, I said, well, you know, you have a minute to like get out of it. It's your last chance. This is heavy. You're going to commit. You're going to surrender to your guru. You know, you sure you want to do that? You know, Krishna's going to test you. He wants to see what you're made of. If you go through a difficult situation, there's a question that can pull you right out of it. And the world looks dark and gloomy, and you ask yourself what's good about it, which is obviously the last question you would ask yourself, because your immediate gut reaction is nothing, but you think about what's good about it. Or what's still good in your life. This one thing is bad, but within the bad, there's something good, and your life is still intact. So, and I still have Krishna, and I'm still a devotee. And now I'm closer to Krishna. I did a service once. It was so difficult. That one day, I was thinking, Krishna, it would really be cool if I just died now, because this service is like too difficult, and I'm dealing with extremely difficult people. If I just die, life would be easier. Now, I wasn't suicidal. It was a thought. And after I had the thought, I said, well, this is really interesting, because this service is so difficult and challenging, I've become very detached from my body. Like, if Krishna came and said, it's time to go back to God, at that point, I would say, let's go. Like, ASAP, get me out of here. I would be so happy. So sometimes Krishna puts us in a position where we just become very detached. So there's a funny story. There was a man who wanted to take sannyas. For those of you who don't know what sannyas is, it's the renounced order when a man takes a vow to never marry, or if he's married, he separates from his wife and takes a vow never to marry. So one man went to Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, and said, I would like to take sannyas. He was probably 35 or something. His wife was probably 32. Generally, sannyas should be taken at a later stage. So Prabhupada said, is your wife okay with it? Yes, Prabhupada, no problem, so let me do it, which was a big lie. I don't know if he was lying or he just thought his wife would be okay, or that he was driving her crazy, so he thought he'd be happy if I was out of the house. I don't know what it was, but she wasn't happy. So Prabhupada said, then okay, you can take sannyas. And even though there wasn't social media in those days, the news got, she was in Mayapur, the news made it to Mayapur ASAP. And she got on the next train, plane, or bullock cart, whatever, and she showed up in Vrindavan. And she was very close to Prabhupada, and she walked into Prabhupada's room. And she was really, really, really upset. It's like, what's going on, Prabhupada? My husband taking sannyas. And then she said something. She said, I just don't know. I just can't go on. I just hate everybody and I hate everything. And Prabhupada said, oh, you're making spiritual advancement. For those of you who are not Prabhupada disciples, things like this would happen. Unexpected. You never know what Prabhupada would say. But Prabhupada's looking at this woman who's just had it with life and thinking, this is actually quite good. You've come to some realization now of what is the nature of the material world. And so that situation brought her to that point. And Prabhupada, seeing it from a different point of view, was thinking, oh, this is good. You're making advancement. Like, you're completely frustrated. Not that we go out of our way to become frustrated, but it does happen. So the next story I like to tell, it's such a beautiful story. And we know the story, and we know many things that Prabhupada said, so for most of you, I'm just reminding you, but it fits well into this discussion. So Maharaj Parikshit, is traveling and he's hungry and he goes and thirsty and he goes to the hermitage of a sage and the sage's son, a Brahmin boy, and the sage is in meditation, trance, so he doesn't know that Maharaj Pichit's there. And Maharaj, you ever been like really thirsty and really hungry, and if you don't get some water or food, you might strangle somebody? You ever been like that? Close to it? On the verge of it? Yeah. It sometimes happens. You know, you're dying of thirst. There's the drink, and I come in and drink it. So, Krishna actually inspired Maharaj Pariksit to become angry. He was beyond that. But Krishna inspired him because he wanted to teach a lesson and he wanted to teach us. So Maharaj Pariksit became very angry. And he took, what did he take? What did he give as a garland? Was it a snake? A dead snake, right? You ask me, you won't even feed me, give me water, here's a snake garland. I'll honor you with a snake garland. The sadhu didn't know what happened. And the son, when he saw this, said, like, who are you to treat my father that way? And he was a Brahmin boy. And he had the power to curse. So again, they don't kill. They don't just scream and yell and jump up and down. They curse. And he cursed him. In 7 days, a snake bird, there is such a thing, a snake and a bird, all packaged together, one animal, will bite you and kill you. Did Maharaj Pariksit have the power to counteract the curse? Was he powerful enough? Yes. Was Maharaj Pariksit the king of the world? Yes. Did he have a good reason not to die? Yes. The world was depending on him. He had a very good reason to live. Did he counteract the curse? No, he didn't. Why didn't he? He accepted this as Krishna's will. Why did he accept it as Krishna's will? Those of you who know the story know that there was a weapon aimed at killing Maharaj Pariksit before he was Maharaj, before he was king, when he was in the womb of his mother. And Krishna entered the womb covered, or as the super soul, covered the womb, and he didn't die. He was protected. So Maharaj Pariksit thought, I am protected by Krishna, so this event must also be Krishna's protection or will. What else could it be? It wouldn't be that Krishna now is not protecting me. Right? That was his thinking. And because he's a pure devotee, that's how he thinks. And because he's a pure devotee, he chanted the mantra, not actually, but for the sake of dramatic and entertainment value, He chanted the mantra, whatever. This snake bird is going to kill you in 7 days. Whatever. We'll just find a sadhu and, you know, hear Bhagavatam and fast and, you know, not sleep. What's the big deal? This is like blissful. You know, I get to hear Bhagavatam. This is going to be ecstatic. This is Krishna's mercy. I can hear the Bhagavatam, die and go back to Godhead. And, you know, many of us who are left here were crying, oh, this is such a bad thing. It's so horrible. How could it be horrible? He went back to God. It's the whole purpose of life. It's not that. So, here we have our second example, Maharaj Pariksit. No problem. Krishna, why? Because everything is Krishna's mercy. He must want this. That was his thinking. He must want this. Remember Prabhupada's example? What happened to Prabhupada's business? Went down the tubes. Right? What was Prabhupada's plan? You remember Prabhupada's plan in his horoscope? It was said he will be one of the richest men in India. Prabhupada's plan, do business, make money. When you have a lot of money, go preach. We've seen that before in ISKCON also. Go out, make a lot of money. When you get a lot of money, preach. The first part usually happens, but not the second. But by the time you make all that money, you don't feel like preaching anymore. Or you're not even a devotee anymore. So, Prabhupada's business crashed. Finished. What did Prabhupada think? My Guru Maharaj wants me to spread Krishna consciousness. This is the sign that I'm supposed to do it. And Prabhupada said on several occasions that I was reluctant to do it, but my Guru Maharaj, by his mercy, he destroyed my business. And he forced me. How many times did Prabhupada say that? My Guru Maharaj forced me. You remember that famous lecture? Who knew I would come to your country? Who knew you would be here? Who knew this movement would spread? This is all the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. Right? It's all, you know. I thought this was the end. I had 5 children, now I have 5,000. So Prabhupada is saying it, a lot of this in hindsight. All the difficulties he went through in saying this is all Krishna's mercy. So let's read something else. Well, this is a story, we're going to have to read it. So one time, Prabhupada was upset. How can a pure devotee get upset? I read a story today. Prabhupada got very upset because he was served cold rice. And he wasn't upset by the cold rice per se, but he was upset at the devotee who should have known when you're serving your guru, you should serve food hot, just to serve prasadam hot. So he told the devotee, he said, don't you know how to serve your guru? You don't serve your guru cold rice. And he got really upset. And later that evening, Prabhupada said, I'm sorry I got upset with you, but I had to do that so you would get the point. So, you know, Prabhupada's upset is not like our upset. So one time Prabhupada got really, really upset. So upset that the devotee that was in the room, who was just accompanying the devotee that Prabhupada was upset with, he was shaking. It was so heavy. It's like thunderbolts and lightning. And so when the devotee who got chastised left, the devotee said, Prabhupada, what should we be thinking when you get angry and you chastise a devotee like that? And Prabhupada said, you should be thinking, there are so many billions of people in the world, and right now I'm giving my attention to this devotee. That is mercy. That's how you should think. Right? You know, sometimes you say, I wish Prabhupada would give me attention. Okay, you want to get chastised. But yes, yes, any attention. Yeah. Well, why not? So, now, of course, we have the classic couple of classic examples in Bhagavatam, which are kind of off the charts. These are actually cases of not curses, but when the angry person was trying to kill. And of course, Prahlad Maharaj comes to mind. Right? Do we ever see any indication in Prahlad Maharaj's mind or heart that he had any doubt that Krishna was behind this? That he had any doubt that Krishna would protect him? So his father gives him food with poison in it, and Prahlad Maharaj offers it and takes it with faith. But now it's prasadam, it's pure. Don't try this at home, but unless you have that kind of faith. And if you tried at home, testing your faith, I have to write a disclaimer, you can't sue me. So Prabhupada said, you can't imitate Prahlad and eat prasadam with poison in it. But he had that faith. This is prasadam. I offer to Krishna, he'll protect me. Amazing, right? So the whole time he was seeing the protection of Krishna. Do we ever see anywhere in that story that Prahlad was angry with his father? On the contrary, we only see that he was merciful. How could you be merciful to someone who tried to kill you? Not just give you some poison on your tongue and you die in 3 seconds, but try to kill you in so many inhumane ways. And that's your father. Nothing. Nothing at all. It didn't disrupt him. Only mercy. Only mercy came from him. Why? You know the answer. This was Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's disciple. Now, we might be looking and questioning, but they're devotees. Why did Krishna allow that? That was the same question that Bhishma did when he was speaking to Yudhisthira. You remember that verse? He was speaking to Yudhisthira. You are the sons of religion. You don't deserve this. This should not happen to the sons of religion. So Bhishma Dev is questioning, how could this happen to the sons of religion? There's attempts on your life. You lost your land. You lost your wife. This should not happen. What was Bhishma Dev's conclusion? He said the only conclusion is it must be Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's desire, Krishna's will. There's no other explanation. And so when we hear these pastimes, when we see these pastimes, then what does that do for us? Those are our examples when we're going through a difficulty, when somebody offends us, cheats us, lies about us, harms us. Those are our examples. How did these pure devotees act? So sometimes Krishna puts the pure devotee through these difficulties. Not even for their benefit, they don't even need it, but for our benefit, to glorify them and to show us how to act. Now, we have a similar example with Ambarish Maharaj. This is such an interesting story. Has someone ever offended you, like in a big way? Yes or yes? Okay. I assume so. In a big, little, or bigger way, right? What if I came to your house for breakfast and I found out that you had taken water before I have eaten, and I told you that is an offense to me, the great Mahatma Das. How dare you? And I invoke my mystic power and create a entity who runs after you to kill you, but Krishna saves you. Would you invite me back for breakfast? Raise your hand if you'd invite me back for breakfast after I tried to destroy you for drinking water before I ate. I don't think you would. What did Ambarish Maharaj do? Invited him back for breakfast. Durvasa comes. Durvasa has been through quite an experience the last year, being chased by the Sudarshan Chakra. I must have done something wrong. This chakra is chasing me around the world, now in this world, the universe, and nobody can protect me. Not Brahma, not Shiva, not Vishnu. And Vishnu says, well, you have to go to Ambarish and ask forgiveness. And so he asks forgiveness, and then the chakra disappears. What did Ambarish Maharaj say when Durvasa asked forgiveness? He didn't say this, but for dramatic content and to keep within the theme of our class, Ambarish Maharaj said, whatever, let's take breakfast. Inconceivable. Isn't it? Is that inconceivable? Like, that doesn't happen. Why did that happen? Why could he do that? The same reason, Krishna's arrangement. And now we have this beautiful story in the Bhagavatam. So when you go outside today and somebody thought their shoes were your shoes and they took your shoes and left their shoes three sizes too small for you, you can chant the mantra that all the great devotees chanted. Whatever. Krishna's mercy. Hare Krishna. So, and then you can stop here and it would be nice to have a little discussion. If you have any stories, you can think of some stories from the Bhagavatam that I didn't discuss, or stories of Prabhupada or other devotees that you know, contemporary. who also chanted the mantra, whatever, who also saw Krishna's hand. Or questions as well. Yes, Champa.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for such a wonderful class.
You're welcome.
When you were at Taco Tuesday this past Tuesday, you were talking a lot about positivity. And
what was that about?
Positivity, how we have to have a positive attitude.
No, positivity. I thought you said plus 50.
Oh, no. Yeah. And today you're talking a lot about, this concept of knowing that everything is Krishna's mercy and like basically the external situations, whatever. So is it, my understanding is that also we want to have, that the highest positive attitude is that whatever happens externally, we have the positive attitude that it's Krishna's mercy and our faith is in the process of pure devotional service and how wonderful is Krishna. But that we should also, in our execution of our service in our life, try to have a positive attitude that things also externally go well so that we can serve Krishna, and do things the best way. So, but it's also, it could be easy to, in that trying to be positive, to have services go nicely for Krishna, to also become attached. So
attached to things going nicely? Attached to having the service go well?
I guess attached to having the service go well.
Yes.
So how do we, I guess my question is the real positive attitude that we try to have the service go nicely and we meditate on the service going nicely for Krishna's pleasure, but that we, if it doesn't go nicely, we still have the positive attitude that this is Krishna's mercy.
And there's two things I can say. And to add to that, and we figure out how to make it go nicely, because if it doesn't go nicely, that means people won't get Krishna consciousness, and not as many people will get it. So it doesn't go nicely, that means I'm not the controller. You know, today it rained and nobody came for Krishna lunch, so that's not good. I don't like it, but it happened and I can't control that. And let's make a plan so when it rains we'll go inside somewhere. You know? So because we care about people. So the detachment is from those things that we can't control.
And a follow-up question on that is,
well, let me take it one step further. There's one aspect of your question is sometimes it doesn't go nicely because we did something wrong. So at that point, we don't want to say, well, it's all Krishna's mercy. At that point, we have to say, don't blame your foolishness on Krishna's mercy. But what is Krishna's mercy is that I right the wrong that I did, that I understand what I did, and I know Krishna, I pray to Krishna, give me intelligence to correct this, give me the strength to apologize to those I have to apologize and so forth. So I think that's important as a nuance aspect of this. Okay, so.
Is it okay to ask a final question? And then we also hear from senior devotees that we should situate ourselves in a favorable position so that we're situated nicely so we can practice from a place of strength.
Yes.
So, my understanding is that also part of a positive attitude is being positive that we can situate ourselves nicely and make like a nice life circumstance for ourselves also. But that also, sometimes I struggle with like, okay, am I really doing this for Krishna or am I doing this for me? And if that life situation doesn't go the way that I was positively wanting it to go, then, how do you still be positive about that?
Well, the line between pure bhakti and impure bhakti is fairly clear, but it may get muddled in our minds. As long as my motive is to purely serve Krishna, then I can accept any facility. And if I need a facility and I know that's going to help me and help others, then that you should be without guilt because there's no personal motive in it. And so you're making the point, but maybe there is personal motive in it. And so maybe there is, but take that personal motive and massage it into, okay, I like to live this way. Okay, fine. If I live this way, then I can be peaceful and inspired so I can give more to Krishna. So if I'm going to live this way, I'm going to give 25% more to Krishna because I'm living 25% more nicely. I can tell you personally in my life, I have this like mathematical equation. And because I accepted disciples naturally that like to serve their guru. And oftentimes I feel unworthy of accepting that service. And I always think, no matter how much service I get, I have to outserve them. I have to do more. I have to give back more. And I don't even have a choice about how much service I get. I have a choice. I could tell everyone, don't do any service. And not all of it is service for me directly. It's just service for preaching. But that's been my equation model. Like, I have a video studio. So probably we have $2,000 worth of equipment in there. So I think, okay, here's $2,000 worth of equipment. I have to use this. So when I first got it, I made a video every day for like 3 years, like 365 videos every day. I think it was 5 years. I said, okay, I'll use it. I can't just, have fun with it, make some fun videos just for fun. So you don't have to be careful. Okay, I need this facility. So, okay. How am I going to pay it back? This one devotee had a Mercedes. I go, why do you need a Mercedes? I pick up all the Maharajas from the airport in my Mercedes. He wanted a Mercedes, but he needed a reason to have one. I go, okay, that's a good reason. I got to ride in it. I was happy. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
The goal of Krishna consciousness is pure devotional service. So somehow or other, in any situation we're in, we have to figure out how to make it pure. Right? You lead a kirtan, everybody's jumping up and down and saying, wow, that was the best kirtan I've ever seen. How are you going to process that? You're going to run away and never lead a kirtan again? No, you have to figure out, how can I do this and remain humble? Because I have this ability to do kirtan, and it would be foolish of me not to use it just because people are praising me. And I love to be praised, and I know it, and I don't want that to interfere with the purity of the bhakti, so I pray to Krishna, how can I do this and be humble and be dedicated and not get affected? And Krishna will help you. That's our move. I may be a mess, but I pray to Krishna to untangle the mess and guide me to pure devotional service, because that's the goal. What's the point of doing anything if it's not pure or it's not going to lead us to something pure? There's no point, right? Okay. Who's got the microphone? Okay.
Krishna.
Speak loudly.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much for the class. I had a similar question in the sense that you were talking about taking, whatever we're given as Krishna's mercy or saying whatever. So what about a situation where you're taken further away from devotees or a spiritual environment where you're able to go?
Yeah.
Should you have that anxiety like, I need to go back there, I need to be with devotees,
yes.
Or should you be like, this
yes.
is Krishna's mercy?
Yes. I have a funny story for you, but I'll answer the question after the funny story. And this partially answers the question. In Dallas, Texas, the devotees bought many houses on the street, on the block of the temple and across the street and around the block. And one devotee wanted to live there, and her spiritual master said, no, don't live near the temple. She said, why? He said, because if you live near the temple, you'll never go. But if you live far away, you'll always be thinking of the temple and thinking, I want to go. And interesting, isn't it? So I'm going to start there. I've seen devotees in situations like you described, and they're thinking of the deities and the devotees more than when they live at the temple, because they're missing it. So in some situations, it can have a positive effect. I wouldn't, if I had any control over my life, I wouldn't live away from devotees. But I'm assuming you're saying it's circumstantial and you can't control it. So then we ask the question, how can this be good? Or we ask the question, Krishna, how can I maintain my consciousness in this situation, which seems to be unfavorable? And the premise is, nothing material can stop my bhakti. Nothing material can create it, and nothing material can stop it. That's the premise. So we pray to Krishna, please give me the intelligence, the inspiration, to figure out how, living in this situation, I can be Krishna conscious. I have a story for you. It's a really, one of the highlights of my devotional career, I was living alone. Now, how was that? I was living in South Africa, in Johannesburg, and we had a temple there, and it was a turbulent time in ISKCON, and one of the leaders of the movement left, and many, many of the people in my temple left, and the ones who stayed were needed in another temple, because they were building this big temple in Durban, and our temple wasn't that important. So I was in India when this happened, and I left the temple with like 7, 8, 9 devotees. We were actually number one in small temple book distribution that year. And I came back and there were no devotees. Like, okay, what do I do now? So I made a recording of cart calls. And I put the cart calls on and I get up in the morning at 4 and do the RT. And then I would give Bhagavatam class to the walls. And then I would go out all day on the street. I had a Changing Bodies exhibit, and I'd go all day on the street and preach. And at that time in South Africa, the educational standards of the average person were something like your average student at Harvard. It was really high. So being on a public street was like being on one of the best college campuses. People were really articulate, really intelligent. And they were close to India. They knew a lot about Indian philosophy. And I was like in seventh heaven. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get up every day at 3 o'clock. I have to do all this to save myself because I'm alone. There's nobody here. And that was probably one of the highest points of my whole life as a devotee. Isn't that interesting? Kind of like, this is make it or break it. So I went, you know, I went to the extreme of being engaged. So I think Krishna inspired me that way. When you're in a situation like that, you pray, you think, how can I be Krishna conscious in this situation? And does that help, or you have more?
Yeah, that does help. I was just thinking, like, should you still have some anxiety at all? Like, I need to be closer to the devotees, yeah. Or is that anxiety still bad?
No, I think it's natural. I don't think you can say you shouldn't. I think it's natural you'd be concerned. For sure. But use that anxiety to propel you forward, to know what you need to do. You know, I travel a lot, sometimes I'm alone. And for me, it's my japa. That's everything. Like I know I have to chant good rounds. I'm in the middle of nowhere traveling around the world and we'll see devotees for a couple of days. You know, just in all kinds of situations, airports and people and airplanes. People eating meat, watching videos, it's not really a good situation. So it's like, okay, I'm going into a heavily virused area, I better like take a lot of supplements when I go in. Like that, that's my thinking. The other kind of thinking is the defeatist. Oh, I'm going into a horrible situation, I'll never be Krishna conscious, so then you don't try. If I take the vitamins, I know I'll get sick. So you don't want to do that. Go there. And then you know, if you're really finding it difficult and your spiritual life is going down, then you want to do something. But it might just be the opposite.
Thank you so much.
What is it? Yes, we have more. Mr. Eddie.
thank you, Prabhu, for this class and taking our questions. A couple points in the class, you mentioned action, difference in the actions that are what Krishna takes in order to teach us things versus our own foolish or bad actions. But I read somewhere, and I'm afraid I don't remember which text it was, in which it said that whether or not we're taking a course of action that will put us in the hellish planets or whether it will lift us into the heavenly planets, those actions are kind of, Krishna wants to send us to these places for these actions for a reason. So wouldn't it stand to reason then that Krishna then has an effect on our actions and causes us to have these foolish actions?
Well, he doesn't cause, generally he wouldn't cause us to act, but he would get the reactions, but the reactions are to rectify us, reform us. The devil made me do it, I'm innocent. That would be absolving ourselves of responsibility for our actions. Now, if you're a pure devotee, sometimes he may. Like Arjuna was purposely put into illusion by Krishna, so Krishna could speak Bhagavad Gita. And Maharaj Pritchard also, when he put the snake on the sage's Samika Rishi, that was inspired by Krishna because he wanted the Bhagavatam to be spoken. So, but if we're not on that level, generally no. Although sometimes I have made huge mistakes which saved me from big disasters. And they were kind of some mistakes that I don't normally make. And whenever I make a big mistake like that, I always think, Krishna must have made this because I don't normally do that. And especially I can say that when I see the consequence. Wow, that was... I once saved myself thousands of dollars. I was sending thousands of dollars and I put the wrong address and it came back. And then I realized I don't want to send that money back because it's actually for the... It wasn't good. Things like that, you know. So you're going to be honest with yourself, you know, when it's actually a mistake or Krishna's just saved you because you're doing something stupid and he got you lost or something and you couldn't execute your plan or doing something that would have been really bad for you. You know, I have a funny story. It's a good story also, a good side of what you're saying. I went to school in Berkeley, and if you've been to Berkeley, Telegraph Avenue is the avenue where, that leads into the school. And this was 1969, so this was still, the hippie movement was quite strong. That was really an outrageous place. And I was into music and I was into sports. I wasn't into reading. Not that I wasn't intellectual. Somehow I didn't like to sit down and read. And then I walked into a bookstore, which would be equivalent to like you walking to a golf store but you don't golf, or walking to a surf shop and you don't surf, or walking to a music store and you don't play an instrument. It's like, why are you in there? So I'm walking around the bookstore and I'm thinking, I don't even read books unless it's for university class. I just don't read. I read some magazines. Like, why am I in the bookstore? It didn't make any sense. And you know, there's many books in the bookstore. So what book do you think of all the books in the bookstore I pulled off the shelf? I'll give you a hint. It starts with B. And it ends with A, yeah. Like, why would I pull a Bhagavad Gita? I didn't even know what it was. So those things do happen also, where Krishna makes us act, but it becomes obvious that was... And then like 3 days later, I walked on campus and Ridhananda, who was Maharaj, who was Bhakta Howard at the time, was sitting behind the temple, behind the table, with Bhagavad Gita's on it. I didn't have money to buy that Gita in the bookstore because it wasn't Prabhupada's Gita. And it said, Bhagavad Gita class, 4 units. 4 units meant it was a full class. I was like, that's weird. Bhagavad Gita class, 4 units? So I went over there and signed up. And so I got to study Bhagavad Gita as a philosophy 101 outside study class or something like that. So that's definitely Krishna. So when you want to be Krishna conscious, you will see all kinds of things happening like that, right? You'll find a Bhagavad Gita in a laundromat trash can. You know, many devotees have, or finding it in a cart in a store, something like that. So, you know, you can kind of tell. And that sometimes you know, you just did something stupid, and it was stupid, and the result was stupid. As I say, when you act stupidly, you get a stupid result, right? And so sometimes you just know, oh, why did I do that? That was really stupid. And now I have to suffer for it, but at least let me get purified and learn from it. So I think you can tell if you just, you know, are objective and honest, and false ego doesn't get in the way, you'll know. There's a funny story. So the devotees were coming to Ratha-yatra from Arizona, and their car broke down. And so they came late, I think after Ratha-yatra they came. And they came in at Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada said, where were you? Why did you come late? And he said, oh, it was Maya, Prabhupada, the vehicle broke down. And so Prabhupada's view was, you didn't take care of the vehicle, that's why it broke down. Generally vehicles that you take care of don't break down. And the Prabhupada said, don't blame your stupidity on Maya. You know, don't blame your carelessness on Maya. So, you know, we have to discriminate. Oh, it was Maya, the car broke down. When was the last time you serviced it? Rupa Yuga, I think. Yeah, okay, that's why it broke down. Not because it was Maya. Right? Yes?
Prabhupada, if I may ask a follow-up question.
Yeah.
So then, as we make decisions through life, and we are usually sure of our decisions because we come to that decision based on laying evidence and all this stuff,
yeah.
So then, does Krishna create the circumstances that will make us sure of these decisions, that we can take certain actions, whether good or bad, to teach us something?
That's possible. If that's the only way we can learn, yes. Prabhupada used to say, an intelligent person learns by hearing, and a fool learns by suffering. And in Kali Yuga, the second system is more common than the first. So, a lot of times we learn through suffering, and then we think, oh, I should have listened. I can tell you how many devotees have done something wrong, and they write me back, and they say, I should have listened to you. You told me not to do this. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. So you had to learn the hard way, but at least you learned. But sometimes it's too late because you've already made a mistake that you can't retract. But that's part of Krishna's kindness, because he knows you will never learn this way, or you will never detach unless I do this. Unless your girlfriend slaps you in the face and tells you you're an idiot, you will never learn how to be a good man and gentle and kind and humble, you know, sometimes. You know, that's maybe not the best example, but you know what I'm saying. That sometimes it can only come that way, through making the mistake and getting the reaction, and you realize, that must have been a mistake. And I've been doing that all my life, but now Krishna's showing me it's a mistake. And if we're stupid, we'll say, oh, it's her fault, I'm innocent. And then you never learn. So you don't want to do that. Is that okay?
Thank you, Father.
One more question.
Yeah. So, Krishna Prabhuji, my question was that how about if someone was following the path of bhakti and then due to some reason he begins to commit sinful acts and says that it's Krishna's mercy and then he misuses Krishna's mercy for his own good. Like for his
yeah. Good. What happens to him?
Yeah.
I don't want to think about what happens to him, because it's not going to be good. If someone takes the bhakti and they commit sinful acts, what they should say is, I'm weak and I'm committing sin and I know it's wrong. If they say it's Krishna's mercy, that's insanity. Unless you can prove that Krishna inspired you to do this for a reason, which generally he wouldn't inspire you to commit sin. So, you know, like the seventh offense, you commit sin, and then you chant Hare Krishna to absolve yourself of the sin. And Prabhupada said, but by doing that, that's more sinful than the sin you committed. So commit a sin and just say, I did it. But you commit a sin and say, Krishna made me do it. That's more sinful than the sin. The devil made me do it. That we don't ascribe to that idea. I'm weak, the devil made me do it. One time, the devotee said to Prabhupada, you know, so-and-so is sincere, but he's weak. And Prabhupada said, well, might be weak, but why are you giving in to the weakness? You know, weak is not an excuse, it's just a situation. But, you know, if you're in the wrong mood, the wrong consciousness is there, I'm weak, therefore I give in. But if you want to succeed, you say, I'm weak, and therefore I have to do something. Maybe I have to make a greater effort than the people who aren't weak. So that's how you deal with it. You accept it. Like, I'm weak and I made a mistake. That's the only way you can rectify. If you blame Krishna, how are you going to rectify? Because you didn't do anything wrong. How can you rectify something that you think isn't wrong? You can't. And then you'll keep doing it. And you become a disgrace to the name of bhakti. So if you're going to commit sin, at least just take the karma. Don't blame Krishna for it. Is that okay? Okay, finished? Thank you very much for staying so long. I appreciate it. And I just want to say, whatever, that's your mantra for life. And I have one other mantra for you. This is when you get upset and you need more tolerance and something happens that really is bothering you. The mantra is, that's interesting. And it really can dissolve a lot. Look what that idiot is doing, I get... No. Look what he's doing. That's interesting, isn't it? You can't believe what my wife did yesterday. She did so many interesting things. It's just amazing. And then you remain equal posed. So that's your mantra, to remain equal posed in spite of all the difficulties in the world. That's interesting, or whatever. And you can guide your life, equal poise, not affected by duality, happiness and distress, success or failure, gain or loss, and then you're eligible to go back home, back to Godhead. That's what Krishna says. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Siddhartha Sam Sundar ki jai, Nitai Gopamanandi Hari Hari Bol.